All right, that all said, last week I did a bit on the sharing masturbation topic. What is it? How do you do it? Why do you do it? What's it about? And I want to go a little more deeply into that and look at some results of that process. So this conversation, this monologue, I guess, though it's kind of a dialogue because people write to me and I read some interesting, beautiful things people say, is for you if you're interested in sexuality, you're interested in your sexuality, you're interested in a wider concept of sexuality. As with medicine, by the way, one of the issues that we live with in our society is a narrow concept of sexuality and an even narrower concept of sexual morality, and it tends to box us in. And so one of the ways that I'm moving into a much wider, fresher space here is through this conversation, which I've been, this ongoing presentation I've been making at Planet Waves back to the first edition in 1998 when I republished the article Coming to the Revolution, which I originally wrote for Rob Brezhne's website, The Televisionary Oracle. He was running a monthly magazine at that time, and I was one of its regular writers. It was a groovy time in internet history, the late 90s and early 2000s. The internet felt like an adventure. And so I republished this piece on the first edition of Planet Waves. It was then picked up by sexuality.org, Coming to the Revolution. It's easy to find, quote, I think it should be at yogislut.com. Then Joe Kramer informed me that he was using it as one of several articles of mine that he was using for the masturbation instruction in his erotic massage classes, which began with the Body Electric School, begun in San Francisco, I think in the late 80s. And then he's evolved this into the School of Sexological Massage, which is now a certified profession in Switzerland. And so, I started writing about masturbation, and then a lot of people have made good use of this article. I mean, that Joe Kramer uses it as his text on masturbation is like, wow, that's cool. That's, you know, this is like, I scribble a couple of thoughts about guitar down and then Eric Clapton is teaching his bandmates with it. This is like high level trust. And what Joe has done is Joe has mainly worked with men. Betty Dodson, a close friend of mine, has worked with women. And Betty doesn't really work with guys. She doesn't really understand guys and not really drawn to her so much, though she's got some notable fans. And Joe has worked with men for all these years, mapped out the shiatsu points on the penis. Betty's mapped out the entire internal clitoris. So these are some good contributors to the world of sexuality. And I'm very fortunate to have learned from them and even made contributions of thought. So, the idea of sharing masturbation with a person is a bit counterintuitive to our society's basically romantic concept of sex and our physical definition of sex, which generally includes all things lead to the penis going into the vagina, very heteronormative, and oral sex is a necessary precursor to that, or if you're polite, you do it, and that's what happens. Anyone who really likes sex and who is curious and a little bit creative and has the opportunity to explore, like a open-minded partner or perhaps a more experienced partner, knows that there's like a whole territory beyond beyond these kind of small ideas. And one of the ways I have discovered, with help, but nonetheless, you know, my own, a lot of my own personal discovery, is how much is available in terms of the sharing masturbation genre of reality. I knew this was something powerful fairly early on in my life, and, you know, would, for example, explore this way with lovers. Then one day I got hold of Betty Dodson's first video, lent to me by a much older lover, a guy by the name of Richard, who had done Joe Kramer's class and who also was a licensed Swedish massage therapist. When I knew him, I was in my 20s, he was in his 60s, and he taught me a lot. And one of the things along the way was he loaned me a copy of Betty Dodson's first video. It was a VHS, and it was the first one documenting the entirety of her body sex workshop in a one-hour video. And this has got to be around 95, 96, something like this, 94. And I got to the part where the women are masturbating together at the end of the workshop. It's 10 women, beautifully photographed, super high energy workshop. First time it's ever being videotaped after, you know, 25 years of doing the workshop. And I was awakened. I remember watching it. It was so powerful. I was sitting like 20 feet back from the television set, which was in a living room, and I was sitting up on the stairs at the back of the living room and watching from the stairs, like seeing it for like maybe the second or third time, thinking, wow, what is this? It was almost like someone had flipped the gravity switch off, and suddenly I could float around the room, and consciousness and all of my ideas about sexuality, which were pretty well expanded by that time, but this was instantaneously radically enlightening, and I knew that I had something to learn and to explore in this territory. And of course, these the women in this video seemed like goddesses on Mount Olympus for their incredible courage and beauty and all this. And in the ensuing time, I've met several of them, and both Betty and Lorraine Hutchins have written reference letters for me back when people were trying to claim I was something that I'm not. And so, you know, I've got two of, like, historical, brilliant sex educator, radical feminists on my resources page, you know, telling their version of who I am, which is a wonderful thing. So these people became real people to me. Betty is a real person to me. I've spent lots of time, never enough, sitting across her art table while she will answer any question I ask her and roll joints and get baked at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Let me record the whole thing. In one recent visit, I don't usually do this, but I opened up her closet and she's like, go ahead and look around. So I'm like looking in her impeccably neat closets, and she's a real person to me. And that's what this is about. It's about sharing masturbation is about entering a sexual space that eliminates all pretexts of what sex is and isn't, and is a glorious moment of be yourself, show yourself for who you are, be seen for who you are, and be a witness to others. Now, this does not need to be in a group of 11 people. It can be in a group of 2 people. It can be in a group of 1 person. I think there are many different modes of expression of sharing masturbation. It includes being alone or alone with a mirror, with any number of different types of people. Could be a lover, could be an ex-lover, could be a possible future lover, could be a close friend, could be a new friend, could be a complete stranger. One of the things about sharing masturbation is I think it is by far the best form of casual sex, because it assumes the least. It requires a conversation. All of this stuff about like whose boundaries are where, and half the time the conversation is either happening or not happening when people are drunk and all this stuff, not possible when it's about let's share who we are. And then you learn from every angle, including what feels good and what feels good to other people. And the setup from the outset is I am me. I'm responsible for what I feel, what I say, and what I do. You are you. You're responsible for what you say, you feel, and you do. And we're going to coexist at a slight distance to make sure that we understand where we're, quote-unquote, coming from, I guess you could say, and then explore. And I think that, in terms of what is during the HIV era, first called safe sex, then called safer sex, the permutations of sexual exchange are many. They include forms of energetic bonding. They can assume implied commitments. There is an incidence level of STI transmission. There's an incidence level of pregnancy. There are a diversity of social implications, which I won't call moral implications. When we go into the realm of sharing masturbation, much of that is obviated. It's not a factor. And what is the factor is sexuality. So it's a form of sex that reduces sex to just sex. There's not a lot of narrative around it. There's a much lower possibility of drama around it. And there is a much wider space made for experimentation. For example, many people are curious about same-sex sexual experiences, but don't exactly know how to get there. There is much social baggage packed around same-sex sexual experiences. The am I gay or lesbian question can come up. You might have a phenomenal sexual experience with someone of the same sex, and then the next day you're like, oh my God, does that mean that I'm gay? This can be an earth-shaking question. It's also a good question to ask, especially if you're not, whatever you happen to be, to engage the question. But with sharing masturbation, the implied things are reduced because of the very strong I am me, you are you, I'm having my experience, you're having your experience, I witness you, you witness me, and there's a conversation that happens. And the conversation is pretty much always interesting because it's a real conversation that is framed in a sexual reality and will involve many things where sex is a factor and sexual feelings are a factor. I think, I've experienced, basically, that the best way to teach this thing I sometimes talk about called compersion is through masturbation sharing experiences. I think that compersion, which I'll define in a second, is the very substance of sexual healing and sexual freedom. I do recognize that there are deep traumas that need to be addressed in ways that the deep traumas can be addressed. It does not subtract the beauty and the power of compersion. Just as a footnote, I have an idea for a guest who I'm pretty sure will be completely willing to come on the program, and we can talk about the healing from the physical and trust injuries from deep sexual trauma. That requires an experienced and specialized voice, and I have her in mind. Short of that, to enter into an idea of sexual healing, which I think a lot of people feel like they need, and there's not really a definition of it. There's many expressions of it. I'm only describing one very polyvalent, wide field of experience, sharing masturbation, that the substance of the healing and the substance of surrender and the substance of the very thing that's exchanged that has so many beautiful positive results is compersion. My definition of compersion is erotic empathy. Were you to look up compersion on the internet, you will probably get definitions such as compersion is the opposite of jealousy. In a sense, that is true. And I have written many articles about compersion, and if you type in the word compersion in my name, you'll see some of them, and many of them are on Yogi Slut. And then I think there's a website called compersion.net, which has some stuff on it, and it's a topic intermingled throughout my writing. Erotic empathy, so we have other resources. Erotic empathy is feeling empathy for the pleasure of another being. Erotic empathy is also experiencing another person empathizing with your sexual pleasure, which includes your preferences and your choices. That's why it's considered the opposite of jealousy. Here's what I understand about where this word comes from. There was a community in the San Francisco Bay Area, I think it started in the Haight-Ashbury, called Carista. And I don't think a book has been written, but a lot of the early poly pioneers have passed through Carista. And it was one of those radical experiments in sharing where money and sex were shared equally. So it was kind of a communal thing where they tried lots and lots of things. And in the course of this, they discovered an emotion, which was, imagine a man has a partner who he loves profoundly, and she wants to have an erotic experience with another man, or a woman, or whoever. They discovered that there was this special kind of erotic love that was coming up for them in celebrating the pleasure that their partner was having, experiencing, independent of them, making love with someone else. You might think, wow, I don't know about this. A lot of people try to be polyamorous without this. Mm-mm, not going to happen. The only reason polyamory works when it works, that is to say, conscious, honest non-monogamy, the reason it works is because people are turned on by the experiences of their lover. They support and encourage and want their lover's pleasure. And when this exists, it is a kind of a transcendent Buddhist state that has a way of dissolving jealousy almost like it never even existed. You wonder, you know, how have I been missing this beauty? Well, there's a lot of reasons. Attachment is a reason, and lack of self-esteem and insecurity and building your whole identity around a relationship. And so there's a kind of a necessary series of steps that go through or plunged into when on the way to discovering compersion. But remember that if you're in a polyamorous situation of any kind, if you know your, that is to say, you know your partner is having sex with someone else, or you want to have sex with someone else, this is not a matter of tolerance. It's a matter of a bold encounter with surrender and compersion. And you know, you may get lucky enough to be in the room and, you know, experience this full on. A real blessing to be able to do this or to be encouraged to have the experience yourself. Now, setting that aside for a second, sharing masturbation can become a contained and safe way to learn compersion. Without, for example, having to go through a full-on polyamorous situation. So, imagine this. Two or three people are in the room, whatever their relationship might be. I know there's a big difference between two or three, but not after a while. And the thing that you're doing is appreciating how blissed out these people with you are, how much pleasure they're feeling. And you can start to resonate with that. You are very likely to resonate with that. What you're experiencing is compersion. And once you've ridden the bicycle 5 feet, then suddenly, you know, going to the store is not that far away, and you might even ride your bike to California. And my work in the poly community, you know, I came to the poly community in the late 90s, and I kind of had an idea, but once I found my, I was aware of the teaching of all the other presenters, first of all, both tantric and social polyamory presenters, and I recognized that compersion is the heart of polyamory on the sexual level. That without compersion, the sexual element of polyamory is never going to work, and with compersion, it's going to work beautifully at times and very well at other times. There's always going to be challenges, but when there's compersion, there is erotic empathy, and there is some space to expand. And what I figured out was the best way to teach compersion was to put people in a room to masturbate together, because it's masturbation. There's plausible deniability that it's sex. Of course, it is sex. In some ways, it's the most sexual form of sex. And, you know, the kinkiest, you do it to yourself, and the gayest, because you're the same sex as you are. And so anyone who masturbates is homosexual, basically. Could start a conversation about that, but hey. And so I would do things like create a workshop where couples could be together, primary partners could be together, and start to share their sexual desires or fantasies and masturbate while doing so, while their partner held space for them. With people who are not involved in a primary partnership or a quote-unquote romantic partnership, it's another kind of daring and perhaps easier. There's less risk involved. And you can learn how to speak your truth. And the feeling of this kind of impending orgasm lurking around somewhere that's kind of know, this thing, looking for a voice and a feeling to go with it, right? It's always there, just needs a way to be expressed, is going to help inform what you say. And so what happens in, especially in that peri-orgasmic space, when you get near there, when you can hear the ocean waves crashing, but you can't necessarily see the ocean, you can smell the sea, and then get closer and closer, and then, you know, you go in the water and the wave crashes over you, and then maybe it does it 20 more times. In the peri-orgasmic space, in that space near orgasm, where the tropism is there and you know what you want, that's the place to find your voice. That's the place to share your feelings and listen to what you say. Listen to what you say you want when the obstacles to truth are taken down. Those are called inhibitions. And so you're going to be one way in an environment where there's a space created where it's okay to be uninhibited and where there's no implied commitment as a result of doing so to anyone but yourself. And there is lots of beauty and lots to learn about yourself and the people close to you and the human experience in this zone. There is so much that it's I think an unexplored universe of sexuality in our era. You know, there's, I don't know of too many like advertised groups who would seem to be underground. There's a thing in the city called New York Jacks, which has been going on for like 40 years. I've gone a few times. I thought it was going on a fairly narrow bandwidth for the most part, but then there can be some surprising breakthroughs and revelations in that space. So this is going to be the kind of thing that you have to create yourself. How do you do it? Well, give people this program to listen to and ask them what they think and how they feel about it. If you know somebody you think might be open-minded, say, click on the last hour, Planet Waves FM, this like freaky guy who used to write about Monsanto and now he's an astrologer, go figure. Also talks about conversion and masturbation and has a lot of experience. Starts at one hour and 40 minutes on this show and just listen from there, even if you don't like astrology. So that's one way. I have a lot of writing. Share the writing. Have the conversation yourself in your own words. There are some friendships where there's a sexual charge in the friendship. It's not a love affair. It's not a sexual partnership, but there might be a sexual energy in the relationship. That's a potential place to explore. And once you're open to the possibility and you start running through the list of people you know and who's a little kinky and so forth, you can start to make your own scene. And the scene starts with an honest conversation, fully dressed. It starts with passing around some materials, listening, reading. Maybe you can acquire one of the Betty Dodson videos. Try to find the first one. I forget the name of it. It's the oldest one, the first one. If I remember next week, I'll call up Betty and find out the name of that. I'm sure it's still available. And you just warm the territory up and you get the molecules vibrating and you quietly exit the realm of this very narrow, restrained concept of what sex is and who's supposed to have sex and start saying the things you're not supposed to say and having the conversations you're not supposed to have. Now, on the topic of consent, and I brought this up last week also, if we're in a consent paradigm rather than a desire paradigm, right? Because in my model, there's two paradigms of having sex. One is a consent paradigm. Yes, you may do this. Sign here, please. And the other one is like, we want each other. What are we going to do? If we're in a consent paradigm, the consent paradigm really requires the ability to have an honest conversation about what you do and do not want and who you are and are not sexually. And I have seen that many people don't have the words. They don't have the words to express the feelings, and you have to find the words. You have to find the vibration of the words, and then most likely people who can't find the words are going to encounter embarrassment. And that must be worked with so that the real conversation can be had. In a sharing masturbation scenario, the conversation is much of what happens. Yes, there's a physical experience happening, and at a certain point, people start to bliss out, and they can forget their minds and, you know, just go plunging into the emotional realm and the kind of psychic pleasure of orgone and orgasm. But you can also, on the way, tune the experience to a verbal level. This is one of the only ways to learn how to have an actual conversation about your sexuality, to be heard, and to hear someone without all the implied stuff, the implied drama, or the getting drunk and forgetting about the conversation. And once you've masturbated with someone a couple of times, it's a lot easier to talk about pretty much anything with that person, especially to talk about sex. And it's a way to get into a space where you can say what you want. Let's end with the topic of embarrassment. This is the... It's kind of a shield placed over all of the deeper pleasures. Many have experienced embarrassment as exciting. Then in another state of mind, it might not be so exciting. Many people's sexual fantasies involve doing something embarrassing. Straight on out to doing all kinds of fun, kinky, degrading things, but... the embarrassment threshold is it's a very easy way to access the deeper pleasures of your own being and potentially of a partner's being. And the thing that usually happens when people get to the embarrassment threshold is that they back off because it's saying, this is embarrassing, I can't go here. One of the very first things I learned about tantric practice is you work with the embarrassment as a form of an invitation, as if it were a kind of a trailhead, and you choose to go through it and be embarrassed and do what's embarrassing or say what's embarrassing, and then you can pick up a current, a kind of a jet stream of like sexual intuition, and start to unravel the deeper pleasures that you can experience. William Pennell Rock wrote one of the most beautiful things I've ever read about sexuality, an article called Jealousy and the Abyss. I used to make a lot of copies of it on Xerox machines, and then I contacted Pennell and got permission to put it up on Planet Waves and then propagated it through the entire polyamory community as a result of this. In case you find it on someone else's website, I'm the person way back in the 1990s who went to Pennell and had lunch with him and started putting this stuff up on the internet. And the article talks about the power of taking jealousy as your teacher. It has a really interesting, useful theory of jealousy. I have part two of that theory, which is the the compersion theory. But one of the things that Pennell says in that article is only the truth is erotic. And usually embarrassment is cast over the truth in some way. It's like this foil. It's like this sheet of Mylar. It's not really very substantial, but it has an insulating quality and a reflective quality, and it can look like something that it's not. And the idea here is that when you start to reveal the truth of who you are, that's when the erotic energy flows. And so when I talk about kind of riding the orgasm to your truth in this slow, subtle way that can take all afternoon, that's what I'm talking about in terms of cultivating a compersion experience. Now, since I brought up Pennell, his theory of jealousy is that essentially it conceals the fear of death. It conceals the fear of the ego death associated with identifying very deeply with a person to the point where the relationship and your identification with the other person becomes the main structure of someone's personality, which can happen quite quickly. And the jealous episode, such as that they then go and have a date or have sex with someone else, reveals this, and it precipitates a kind of an ego death, which he's saying is metaphorical. It's a great theory. It needs an extension. And the extension is, in my view and experience, is that the jealous episode is concealing profound sexual beauty and desire and the need to surrender. This has to be approached gently and very consciously. But the thing that the jealous emotion in the jealous episode, counting people as being modestly healthy, is a profound desire to have that experience. Now, I know that if your boyfriend is freaking out that you even looked at someone, well, that's not going to bode too well. And you, some people you just can't, they make up stories about you. Please don't make up stories about other people, but they make up stories about you, and they're going to stick to it. You fucked your boss. You didn't. But that's the story in their head, and somebody you may be married to might think that for 20 years. This is not the place to enter the territory of compersion. There's a lot of control going on in there. It is with more open-minded and relaxed people who don't have a claim to you that the territory of compersion can be very gently opened up, which is why I suggest that people do it, people who are not either not committed partners, or you just masturbate together with your partner, which I would propose be half the sex that people have. Fuck half the time or do whatever you do, and you share masturbation the other half of the time. And I realize there are people who are not going to be turned on by this, and it's just not going to be interesting or all that. So if that's you, fine. Maybe you'll have the experience, maybe you won't. But if you get what I'm saying, what I have seen is that sharing masturbation has a way of enriching the entire erotic experience you have with a lover, and creates a little like learning laboratory where you can say what you're feeling, say what you want, hear what someone else is feeling, hear what someone else wants, and reveal all kinds of things about yourself and demonstrate physically what you like, what gives you pleasure. Now, daring territory in that we're entering the Persian zone. When we agree to tell the erotic truth, we might start to talk about the person we've got the crush on, right? Is your partner necessarily going to respond positively to you saying, I'm turned on by the guy who makes my coffee every morning? Well, it's your truth. It's not a big deal. Everyone has attractions. Anybody who claims they doesn't is making up stories. I don't care if they're sly or subtle or rare or they're happening every 20 minutes. Everyone has attractions. So no one can say that you're a bad person for having an attraction unless they're just a control freak. But on the positive side of this, you might find it really turns your partner on. And if nothing else is fantastic fantasy play, which you're engaging emotionally and physically, and it's a space to explore. So, what I'm describing is a little like Burning Man. Burning Man consists of this massive temporary city organized in avenues and boulevards and blocks and center camp and services and the post office and the bike shop, and all of that is basically around the edge of the city. And in the center of the city, where the Burning Man statue is, the wooden construction, which gets more exciting every year, and I wonder how they're going to handle it with this corona thing going on. In the middle of the city is all of this wide open space. It's a mile across. A mile is a lot when it's a square mile. And maybe you've been there, and you know, maybe you know that there's one experience of Burning Man roaming around the streets and everyone's free grilled cheese restaurant and their, you know, the bike repair shop and all these things and the different parties going on and all this. And when you wander out into the center of the playa, there's a lot of room to move around. The art exhibits are placed in a kind of a random pattern. There's a point of orientation, the man, and you are free to roam around. It's a great place to roam around tripping. If you're going to roam around any place tripping, that's pretty much the place. Because you never know what you're going to find or meet. This is the sexual territory that I'm talking about. I'm talking about leaving the city, leaving the known, mapped out grid of civilization, with its ice machines and its coffee bars and things like that, and entering into the whole vast middle ground of experience, where you are free to move in any direction, free to go in any direction, focus your interest on what turns you on, and to move on when you're ready. This is the space I'm describing. I'm calling it sharing masturbation. But really, it's a trailhead into another dimension of experience and of self-exploration and of making a deep sexual inquiry into the nature of your own existence. And great fun. Really. Those who have experimented know. And I'm always thrilled when I hear a couple say, well, our sex life was getting so boring, and then we masturbated together, and then suddenly all this sexual energy came back into our relationship. It's like, good. And then I think of William Pennell Rock. Only the truth is erotic. So all that stuff we suppress and don't say just holds down erotic energy. And when we teach ourselves to speak and be open and to share and to connect your voice to your sexuality, many things are possible. One last note regarding this pandemic scare that we're now living in the middle of, that has basically imposed itself on all of our previous notions of 21st century civilization, is that this is a pretty good form of experimental sex if you don't want to do fluid bonding, i.e. consuming one another's body fluids, or kissing, but you want to have an exciting experience. In one version of the fictional, in my fictional concept of how this sharing masturbation meme might express itself in society, the notion of some illness situation like we're in, like, oh my God, you know, who has this, who doesn't have it, factored in. It'd be a very exciting sci-fi scenario to experiment. We're now in the middle of it. And so here's a way to have the physical experience of sexuality and an intimate experience of sexuality that is on safe ground in many different ways. People can respond powerfully. That's the thing to be mindful of. But it's not the same responding powerfully as, you know, we fucked once, now we have to get married. It's a different trip. Very different trip. Huh. All right. So that's my free form description of this whole region in my latest version of it. I will make this part of the program shareable so that it's easier to share in the event that you want to say, oh, by the way, just here's this 45 minute talk. And as ever, I welcome hearing from you and hearing about your experiences, efc@bookofblue.com. And I have mapped out many of my experiences along the way in Book of Blue, which is something around 100 articles, stories and emails and different things where, you know, I tell the sexual version of what I've been describing here in theory. And should you want access to that, just drop me a note and tell me a little bit about who you are, and I'll respond with how to get in there. Meanwhile, keep the conversation going. Be brave about who you are. It is who you are. You do not have to submit to any fixed definitions. And with that, I'm going to leave you with a Johnny Cash medley, I think beginning with The Wreck of Old 97 into Folsom Prison Blues, and then a few off of some very old records way back at the beginning. Good to be in contact with you and to share this time together. You know where to find me. And bye for now.
I want to tell you about the three fellas that make the great sound behind me. Two of them have been with me for about 13 years. There's Marshall Grant. From Jackson, Tennessee, W.S. Holland. And just recently joining our group from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Bob Wooten. I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. Yeah! But that train keeps a-rolling all down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son,
Always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. I bet there's rich folks eating in a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me.
Hey, one more time.
But if they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, then I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.